This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
You know what? I will say this, though, to start with the sports.
Yeah.
I want to ask you this question. Watching that Monday Night Football game last night, can you pick out the one play that, as a Jets fan, would drive me the most crazy with what we dealt with?
As a Jets fan, that would drive you the most crazy watching that game last night? Chris, you can help as well here.
What we're dealing with? I mean, we have a young quarterback, 23 years old, right? Like, you're trying to develop the young quarterback. You're trying to do whatever you can.
Is this a Jared Goff play?
This could be a Jared Goff play. I mean, that's why Sean McVay was hired, was to get the best out of Jared Goff. Can you pick out one play? And it happened early. The play happened early.
The play happened early
that would drive me crazy as a Jets fan.
I cannot identify the said play. I'm thinking of something with the way they appropriately used Jared Goff, but I can't think of what that play is specifically.
It was the first touchdown.
To Reynolds. When they rolled him out left.
Well, not even they rolled him left. They were sitting in the hole. All of a sudden, they got to the line really quickly. Buster Screen got caught up in the wash because he didn't know what the hell was going on. They had Reynolds in the backfield, and he's wide open at the pylon. Little trickery, but again, it's doing whatever it takes to have the outcome you're looking for. It's a little creativity,
ever. Here's the thing, though, and I understand your frustration, and I don't think Adam Gase is good at all, but when you look at Sean McVay, you're talking about one of the top five coaches in the NFL right now. I mean, this guy's an offensive mastermind, and he's shown it time and time and time again.
I understand that, but I mean, when you watch Jared Goff play, do you think that Jared Goff is more talented than Sam Darnold? Because I don't.
I actually do.
See, I don't think he's more talented than Sam Darnold. I think what you've seen from Sam Darnold hasn't been great, but I think that's a result of lack of talent around him, a bad offensive line, and on top of it, I don't think that Adam Gase is the offensive genius that he claims to be.
Well, that I agree with, but it's just hard for me. And listen, I'm not in love with Jared Goff. I don't think he's a top 10 quarterback in the league, but it's hard for me to take a guy that, you know, for lack of a better term, led his team to a Super Bowl. Now they're 5-2. And say that he's not better than a quarterback that I have no idea what he is.
Yeah, but go back and look at all the things that Sean McVay has done for Jared Goff. I mean, we talked about this in the Super Bowl now. I mean, New England shut them down in the Super Bowl, but I mean, one of the things that they would do is that they would get to the line of scrimmage early so Sean McVay in Jared Goff's headset could help diagnose what was going on. That's a great way to help a young quarterback. Adam Gase doesn't do that, or has never attempted to do that. Do you see much motion with the Jets offense?
No, I think the Jets are stagnant. I don't think they're creative. I think that Gase is not done a good job with all. I'm not arguing any of that. I'm just saying, like I don't think Goff is that bad. I think Goff is a middle-of-the-road quarterback, and I don't know that I can say the same thing for Adam Gase right now and Sam Darnold. I think they are, I don't know, if not bottom of the barrel, close to it. At this moment, it's hard to say they're not.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I mean, that's been the result. But what I see from Sean McVay in that offense is it looks real complicated with all the motion and movement and everything else, but they're pretty simple principles. It's just a lot of eyewash to change, you know, where defensive players are looking at and everything else. That's going to help out your offensive line. It's going to help out your quarterback. They consistently roll him out. There's never he's not a sitting duck, you know what I mean? Like, he's not a stationary target. Like, all those things would help. Like, we always see Sam Darnold. He's so much better when he's outside of the pocket, when he's rolling to his left or his right. That's when it seems like he has the most success. And I don't see enough of it. Like, you're not doing this kid any favors. Your offensive line's not good outside of Mekhi Becton. And you don't have a bunch of guys on the outside that can win one-on-one. And you saw that in the Buffalo Bills game in the second half. They're playing man coverage, and you had 4 total yards in the second half. I don't think something like that would happen if you had a more creative play caller. I don't.
I think I don't know, to be honest with you. I do believe, though, that you're lacking in so much in every area. Like, I still think that, and I think Sam will be good, but I think the jury is tremendously out on him. I think the lack of weapons that they've given him is an embarrassment, and I think the head coach has done a terrible job. So I don't blame it all on one, but I think these things, you know, mashed together as a grouping is just, it spells winless is what it spells for the Jets.
Yeah, but I think you also have to blame it on from how this whole thing started, too. I mean, I think, you know, what you've seen is, I mean, at this point, has been a culmination of the entirety of Sam Darnold being here with how he was handled to begin with. I mean, you draft him. Now, Todd Bowles is an unbelievable defensive coordinator. You're seeing that in Tampa. I mean, jury's still out if he can be a great head coach. We don't know yet. But you get a defensive-minded head coach. You got Jeremy Bates, who no longer coaches in the NFL as his offensive coordinator. You're playing three games in 10 or 11 days. And you got Teddy Bridgewater and Josh McCown. And you decide to start Sam Darnold week one? I mean, that aggravated me to begin with. And luckily, after that pick six, he played well in that Detroit game. And then you fast forward. I mean, would it have hurt to kept Josh McCown with the relationship he had with Sam Darnold to help Mudd a little bit? Probably not. That would have been nice. Then you fire Todd Bowles, hire Adam Gase. That's another new system in year two. You saw what Adam Gase did to Ryan Tannehill. I mean, you got this bad taste in your mouth. I mean, it's still to this day. You've seen enough to believe that Ryan Tannehill is actually a really good quarterback, but in the back of your mind, you still have that hesitation. Everyone still has that hesitation.
When you talk about the elite quarterbacks in the NFL, you never want to include Tannehill because you have that, yeah, but he was so bad under Adam Gase in Miami taste, right? You can't get rid of that taste.
You can't unsee it. And unfortunately, I think Sam Darnold is caught up in the same thing, unfortunately. And it's going to take a change of scenery, and it feels inevitable that as soon as, you know, when this mercifully is over this season, and they've won, you know, one or no games, that he'll be moved, and poor Trevor Lawrence will be exposed to this. Because unless they make changes up top, unless the structure of the organization changes, and Joe Douglas, a football person, is making these decisions, it's not going to change.
Yeah, no, I know. Unless you have blind faith listen, you got to hope that Douglas is good, and you have to hope they empower him. Because if one of those two things does not happen, you're just going to rinse and repeat. It'll just be a different quarterback and maybe with a higher ceiling and maybe a guy that can take lesser talent and make it good, but it's just going to be the same song and dance over and over and over again until you eventually get it right. And that's got to be the big concern for Jets fans heading into another season. You're going to move on from Sam Darnold. We know that now. Odds of you winning two games and not having a top two pick are almost infinitesimal. And you're going to move on from Darnold. You're going to hand the reins over to a rookie quarterback who hopefully you'll give some weapons and a decent offensive line to. But there's a lot of questions surrounding this organization.
A lot of questions. And you're going back. We've pretty much gone back. We wasted 2 years and we're back to where it started with McCagnan the year he got fired. Is you got a bunch of draft capital and a bunch of money to spend. And you're looking at who the next head coach is going to be. And that has to be Douglas making that decision. It has to be. This cannot be another situation where if it's Woody or Chris hires the head coach. It can't. It's not going
to
work.
If Douglas signed on to this job, he had to know what the order of operations would be, no? Like this is going to be your baby? You know, it's a 6-year deal. They gave him that. He's got longevity, obviously. He's going to be here for a long time, and it's got to be you. Otherwise, why would he take the job?
Well, he took the job because it's a 6-year deal. I mean, how often are you going to get a 6-year deal as a GM?
I understand that, but and still, if you're not going to have control and you're not going to have power.
Well, I mean, but how can you sit here now and just say, like, okay, Joe Douglas all of a sudden is going to have this power? When we asked, was it Dan Graziano I asked about moving on from Adam Gase? No, it was Sal Pal. And Sal Pal said that's not really a Joe Douglas decision. That's going to be an ownership decision.
Yeah, that's a major issue.
That's a huge issue.
A huge issue. I mean, that's a franchise-altering issue. If you have the Johnsons, and whether it's Woody or Chris or combination or whatever it's going to be, ultimately make the decisions of who your head coach is going to be. It's going to be, unless you hit a home run, unless you blind luck just pick out of the air and get the right guy, you're going to have a tough time ever winning in this league.
Yeah, and I don't care how good the quarterback is. I don't. Like, I mean, there's a handful of guys. I mean, the Elways, the Peytons, the Andrew Lucks, but even Andrew Luck, I mean, he should have had more success than he had. Now, he was great. I mean, he took a brutal team that had the first overall pick and won 11 games, but because it was so poorly managed, I mean, the poor guy had to retire. In the middle of his prime, which should be his prime, he had to retire.
Yeah. Well, they beat the career out of him.
Exactly right. So I don't care. I mean, Trevor Lawrence could be one of those guys and could be great, but he won't reach the heights that we think he could reach if this thing is going to continue to be managed the way it's managed.
Well, the only thing I'll say, and you're right, and do I have reservations? Absolutely, is that you think, and you feel pretty good about having a franchise left tackle in place, right? So you'll bring the quarterback in at least a franchise left tackle, which, as we see with the Giants, is a really big deal.
It's a huge deal. I mean, you saw it last night. The Bears' offensive line was terrible.
Oh my God. The Bears are just, they're terrible. They're the worst 5-2 team I've seen.
Yeah, because their defense is good.
Very good.
They got a good defense.
Their offense is awful.
Yeah.
I cannot watch Nick Foles play a football game and think to myself, this guy won a Super Bowl and outdueled Tom Brady in a Super Bowl. Like, that will never go away.
Yeah, but he's like a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL, man. I mean, he's a guy, if you put it with the right talent around him, with the right offensive line, with, you know, the system, he can have some short-term success. A lot of quarterbacks are like that. We get into this whole thing where it's like, every quarterback that's drafted high in the first round is going to turn out to be like Pat Mahomes. That's unfair. Those are unfair expectations to put on a kid. Like, because you drafted him in the first round, he's going to be the savior of your franchise. It doesn't happen that way. You got to support the young quarterback, either with talent on the offensive line, a really good offensive line, you know, weapons, or a great defense. And neither New York team has any of that. Any of it.
No. The only thing to say about the Jets is they're going to have collateral. They're going to have real pieces. You're going to have probably the top pick. You're going to be able to move on from Sam Darnold. You have Seattle's number one selection. You have Seattle's number one selection next year. You're probably going to have another high pick next year, and you're going to have a boatload of money. So, listen, those are things that are enticing. Now, whether you hit home runs with them or not remains to be seen. But I just laid out, I mean, that's a lot of positives in your corner.
It's a lot of positives. You're right. But I think the one holdup for me, if I was Eric Bieniemy or any one of these guys that, you know, you're hoping to get, is the influence of ownership in making some of these decisions. Because in all the good franchises, Dave, I don't care what the sport is, the owners, I mean, they're there to sign checks. That's what they do. They hire the right people, and then they let those people make decisions. That's how it's supposed to work.
That's what good organizations do. That's what good businesses do.
And right now, I don't think that either of the New York teams have been doing that.
I think you're 100% right.
I know the Jets haven't, and I think the dirty little secret with the Giants has finally kind of reared its ugly head.
The Giants
have
not.
With how the whole Gettleman thing went down.
It's been a disaster. Listen, we laugh at the Jets and they're winless and they could go winless and they're losing by a million points a game and all that. The Giants are not that far behind. The difference is you think you might have your head coach, and that is a big difference. You think you might have hit a home run with him, but results-wise, you're 1-6. You're competing, but you're still losing games.
Yeah, but even how they went about hiring Joe Judge, and I like Joe Judge a lot, I really do, is still a little bit strange. I mean, if your GM is, and I get it was an organizational hire, but still, well, I mean, it would lead you to believe that if Dave Gettleman does retire, you know, whatever you want to call it, retired, kind of gets fired or whatever it is, that the next GM is going to come from inside the organization. Because you're not going to, I mean, are you really going to have someone from outside of the organization? I mean, unless he's got ties to Joe Judge and just give him the head coach.
I think that they love, and this is interesting, and I've talked to Renan about this, I think they love Joe Judge to the extent that when they, and I don't even think it's an if at this point, when they move on from Dave Gettleman, Joe Judge will be directly involved in who the next GM is going to be.
Okay, so that's a positive.
Absolutely it is. If you like him and you trust him, and this is who he wants, and this is who he trusts, you'd figure, right, if 2 and 2 make 4, that this would be the right guy, hopefully, for this organization.
Yeah, I mean, that would make the most sense. And I think you're seeing that more and more in the NFL, that the GM and the coach are tied at the hip.
But who knows? I mean, can I sit here and tell you I have ultimate confidence in the Giants? No. How could you? Rick, the last decade has been bad. I mean, since they won the Super Bowl, they have been a bad franchise.
Yeah, but at least you do have the Super Bowls, I mean, which is nice.
And it's fair, but you know what? I hear the Yankees fans complain all the time. They go to the ALCS or the ALDS, and it's like, oh, we can't get it done. The Giants they win 3 games a year. So, yes, I have 4 Super Bowls to show for it that stretch back from 86 to 2011. But still, at what point can I get annoyed that it's not looking good now?
I think you're at the point. I mean, I think you're at
I'm at the point, but I hear, oh, don't, it's unfair. You act like that. You've had 4 Super Bowls. So now it's just a forever pass. It's a hall pass that goes on for eternity because they've won 4 Super Bowls in my lifetime.
No, but I think that's partly what got you in a bit of a trouble in the predicament that you're in now, though, is because you won that, you know, you won those championships. It's, I mean, there's not a lot of teams that are willing to do what Bill Belichick does in New England and just say, you know what, it's time to move on. Like, I mean, he realized that, listen, Tom Brady at 43 years old, I mean, if last year we were talking about we can't be the team that we need to be because he's not surrounded by enough with enough talent, I can't surround him in one offseason with enough talent to make us a Super Bowl team. So I might as well pull the Band-Aid off now and let him move on and, you know, see what I get with Jared Stidham or, you know, pick up Cam Newton and kind of restart this thing. A lot of teams aren't willing to do that. A lot of franchises aren't willing to do that.
We saw the Giants would do with Eli Manning. I mean, listen, everyone that watched Eli Manning, 90% of the people, outside of having been great and had tremendous moments in his career with the organization, looked at him and said, he's not the same quarterback, and he's not going to lead you to the promised land. Yet the Giants brass either A, believed it, or B, were so blinded by their affection for him that they refused to move on. That's a bad job, Rick. I'm sorry. It's a bad job by that organization.
No, it's a terrible job, and I think that's exactly what you saw. It's not if, I think it is exactly what happened.
Which is which? You thought he was still good, or he was so good for you in the past that you thought that he bought himself more time?
It was how John Mara felt about Eli Manning. I think you saw that when, you know, what happened with McAdoo. I mean, when he benched Eli Manning, that was it for Ben McAdoo. And the way that the fan base responded, that was it for Ben McAdoo. John Mara loved Eli Manning. It was going to give him every opportunity to make one last run at it.
Well, let's be honest. A large reason the Giants are where they are is because they loved Eli Manning so much that they would do whatever it took to try to force winning with him. It's why they took Saquon Barkley. It's why they made a ton of the moves they made. It's why they stuck with Eli for way too long, and it's why they are where they are right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's why he went out and spent all that money on Solder. He got, Amame. I mean, you made a bunch of moves to try to win now, and unfortunately you didn't win now. And you felt like because you weren't winning, it felt like you'd already start rebuilding, but you really weren't in a full-blown rebuild yet. So you set your rebuild back a couple years.
Where do you think the Giants are as far as the rebuild is now? Like levels? Like they've bottomed out and they're on the way up, in your mind?
Yeah, I'd say they probably they bottomed out and they're on their way up.
But there's still a long way to travel up the mountain.
Yeah, there's still a long way. But your division is terrible.
Have the Jets bottomed out yet?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. How could it get any worse, man?
We say that all the time, and it manages to, though.
You're a 19.5-point dog against the Kansas City Chiefs right now. And that's because for some reason people put money on the Jets. Because I just think that they feel like Kansas City is just going to take their foot off the gas at a certain point. It's bad. And then you're going to start. I mean, now you're going to start fresh with a new head coach and a new rookie quarterback. You wasted 2 years is what you did. I mean, that's what
three.
We've done. We wasted.
Well,
I
three.
Mean, but you really wasted the two because you let McCagnan spend the money and then make the draft picks and then you fired him. That was the big.
Yes.
The huge mistake.
Yeah. A monumentally franchise altering mistake.
There's no excuse for that.
If you went to like how to build a franchise 101 in the first day of college, they would say, whatever you do, don't do that.
Yeah, or whatever you do, don't do what the Knicks have done. Like let Phil Jackson pick Frank Ntilikina and then fire him. And then you turn around in the same city and do the exact same thing.
It's awful. It really is franchise malpractice.
Yeah, and Sam Darnold is ultimately going to be the one that pays the price for it because he's going to be on a new team and then you're going to draft a new quarterback. And now Sam's going to have to do what Ryan Tannehill did, is, you know, find the right spot and then, you know, hopefully resuscitate his career and reach the potential that we all believe he has. Because, I mean, there are so many people that I listen to. You know I listen to everything. I was listening to Jordan Palmer, who works with Sam, he works with Josh Allen, he works with all these quarterbacks during the offseason. He said he gets phone calls during these games, like people feeling bad for Sam Darnold, saying, like, you realize that Sam is better than a lot of these guys in the league that are having success, but he's in such a brutal situation that you don't get to see it.
Yeah, and I believe that's true. If you said to me, rank the quarterbacks based on what they can potentially do, I mean, I don't think Sam is a bad quarterback. I actually think if he goes into a Pittsburgh or a New Orleans or a franchise like that, I actually think he's going to be a good quarterback. And I think it's going to drive you insane that you're going to watch Sam Darnold succeed somewhere else, and the only reason he didn't succeed here is because you guys completely messed it up from get-go.
Yeah, that's fully what I expect to happen. Like, I've already resigned myself to the fact that's exactly what's going to happen. Because, I mean, I've said this the entire time. It felt like if there was a checklist of ways to ruin a young quarterback, they were just checking a box, like just slowly going right down the list, check that box. We'll check that box. And it's what exactly what they've done.
It's bad. I mean, I don't know. I don't. There's no two ways about it. What they have done to him is awful. Because I really believe that he will be the next Ryan Tannehill. I really do. That he's going to go to a situation with a good offensive line and a good offensive mind and decent weapons, and all of a sudden you'll watch him and be like, wow, he's good. The only difference is it really surprised me with Tannehill. It won't surprise me with Sam Darnold. When he does it, I'll be like, yep, this is exactly what I expected.
Yeah, and I mean, he's more talented than Ryan Tannehill was or is. I mean, Ryan Tannehill was not. I mean, he was a wide receiver, like a. I mean, Sam Darnold at USC, I mean, what you saw in that Rose Bowl, people were like, oh, my God, this kid's got unbelievable amount of talent. Look at his size. Look at his athleticism. And now he comes here, and it's like he's not a good quarterback. He's not good. Like, he's turned into a less-than-average quarterback.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
But has he turned in, or have the Jets turned him into this? That's my question. I don't – if you had to place blame, I don't place a ton of blame on him. I really don't. I mean, he's never done this before. Look at who's his best receiver been? His best weapon has been since he's been here.
Jamison Crowder.
Okay. Jamison Crowder is a what? Is an average wide receiver?
I mean, he's probably a good third option.
Okay. So his first option, I mean, it's supposed to be Quincy Enunwa. He can't stay on the field. Every step of the way, there's a problem. So you explain it to me.
No, I can't. I mean, it's the recipe to have this happen. What you did to this kid is exactly what, I mean, you would expect to happen. There aren't a lot of guys out there walking the face of this earth that are good enough to just step into a dysfunctional situation like this and actually put a team on their back at a young age and carry a team. It doesn't happen. Like, I don't think, you can say what you want, I don't think if Pat Mahomes was drafted by the New York Jets, he would be anywhere close to the Pat Mahomes we see now.
I never agreed with you with that, and I think I do now. Because I always thought that talent will win out. I always thought that if you're just that immensely talented, wherever you go, you're going to find a way. And I still think that there's some of that, but I don't believe that talent always wins out now. I mean, look what the Jets have done with this kid. Look what happened to Tannehill in Miami. I feel the same way with Daniel Jones. I mean, if the Giants go 2-14 and they move on from Daniel Jones, I believe that if he goes to a better situation, a real situation, he could be a really good NFL quarterback. No, I don't think it's as dire and extreme as it is right now with Sam Darnold, but I think the jury's still out with Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I think the jury's still out, but I mean, he's another one that gets put into a situation where he's replacing a legend, and I think he did a hell of a job doing that in his rookie year. I thought he was great.
But can you guarantee me as we approach the end of his second or midway through his second year that he's going to be the Giants quarterback next year?
No, you can't, but I think that's just the thought process with young quarterbacks right now is that, like, because there are a lot of options, it seems like coming out of school, that you feel like I need to instantly see this guy have success to buy into it, and you neglect the fact that, I mean, there's not a lot around Daniel Jones. There really isn't. I mean, his offensive line is awful. The left tackle you drafted with the fourth overall pick isn't very good. I mean, it's not. And I get it. I mean, he's his own worst enemy sometimes because of the turnovers and everything else, which has to stop. But, I mean, the Giants aren't the only team. The Jets have done it. And you saw, I mean, the Washington football team, they're not even dressing Dwayne Haskins. He's done.
No, I don't think he'll ever play there again. But here's the thing. You're the Giants. You want to be compared to the Jets? You want to be compared to the Washington football team? I mean, these are the two of the most dysfunctional franchises in all of football.
No, I get it. I mean, but at a certain point, I mean, you have to have some conviction, right? Like, you drafted this kid sixth overall. He had a good rookie year. Like, you have to stand by this kid. But again, I think you get into one of those situations because you don't win a lot of football games that now all of a sudden, because you are so bad, now you're given the option. If you have another high draft pick, it's like, okay, now what do I do? Like, if you were winning games, you wouldn't even have that option to even consider taking a Justin Fields.
Nope.
But now you might.
You might. There's a real chance that we might wind up with the top two quarterbacks available in this draft in this city next year, which honestly, from both these franchises, is an utter embarrassment.
Yeah, because if you're not selling winning, you're selling hope. That's what you're selling. And a lot of these, I mean... In life in general, I mean, you're as loyal as your options. So if all of a sudden now I got the second or third pick with a chance to take Justin Fields, now that's a legitimate conversation to have. As opposed to if you won five or six games, you wouldn't that conversation wouldn't exist because you're not trading up to draft Justin Fields. You wouldn't do that.
No. No, if you're the Giants and you draft, you know, if you win four games and you draft sixth, you're gonna stick with Daniel Jones. But if you win two games and you draft second, I think the debate is there. Do you go with Justin Fields or do you stick with Daniel Jones? Because let's remember as well, Gettleman, odds are not going to be here. Joe Judge came in here and inherited Daniel Jones. This was not his quarterback.
Yeah, and it's a reset. I mean, drafting a young quarterback, it's a reset. You're resetting your fan base's expectations.
No, but then you take two steps back again.
No, I get it.
And listen, if it's the right move, it's the right move. If the Giants look at it and Joe Judge and the new GM and the ownership look at it and say, look, we like Daniel Jones. We just think that Fields is a far superior quarterback and that's the direction we have to go in, then that's what we'll do. And I'll be on board with it, but it's franchise malpractice is what it is.
That's exactly what it is. But again, it's resetting the expectations from your fan base, though. Like your expectations of the Giants going into year three of Daniel Jones are going to be a lot different than going into year one of Justin Fields. Like, by nature, you're like, oh, he's a rookie quarterback. He'll make some mistakes.
Of course. Because you would think if you continue to head in the right direction next year under Daniel Jones, if it is still him, would be a 500-ish year. If you have to reset and go back and it's Justin Fields, I mean, you got to think that there's going to be growing pains. You're going to win three or four games or maybe five games yet again because you started from scratch yet again.
And that's part of the reason that you would do it. Is because that would excite your fan base. I would imagine. I mean, Justin Fields, I mean, you watch him play at Ohio State. That would excite me. The kid's legit.
It's a stud.
It's the same reason why the Jets would draft Trevor Lawrence. Because they're not selling. They've been awful. When they're not selling any winning, you reset the money. And on top of it, you got, you know, what's supposed to be a generational talent at quarterback to give the hope to the fan base again. Because you've beat the hope out of us.
Yeah, so, but again, and I know the Jets are at you know, stage one to begin with, but you start all over again.
Yeah, but we already did start all over.
But how many times can you start all over again and again and again and again?
Well, this has to be the last time. Like seriously, if you draft Trevor Lawrence, whoever they hire has to be there has to be some continuity. Like he has to be the one that's going to develop Trevor
Lawrence. He's going to be great. And I think everybody knows that he's going to be a star NFL quarterback. But Rick, there's got to be that little bit in your mind that says he's going to be great. I trust him implicitly, but we're still the Jets. And if any team could find a way to mess this thing up with him, it's going to be us.
You know what my bigger concern than that is because that, I mean, you said that, you know that's the truth, is they find a way not to get the first overall pick.
I mean, you'd have to win a game.
No, I get it. But I mean, that would be the Jetsiest thing to do is you have this, you know, once in a lifetime since Andrew Luck generational talent and you somehow screw it up and don't get a chance to draft him.
Oh, my God. It's bad. It's really, really bad. All right. So we'll get to the calls in a moment. Rick, a little new ownership for the Mets. Looks like we are an I away from being dotted and a T away from being crossed for Steve Cohen to run the New York Mets.
Yeah, let's just get it dotted. Let's get those T's crossed. That's what we all want. Let's make it happen.
And there's all these negative people who are out there like, oh, De Blasio is going to say it's not allowed to be done, or MLB owners are going to say this thing's going to get done. It's only a matter of when.
You can feel that. I mean, you know. I mean, you feel the same way. I mean, you're putting on a like this tough guy routine, but you feel the same way. Like there's that little piece in you that's like why even have this as a conversation right now? What are we trying to do?
No, I think this is done. I'm not concerned.
Yeah, this is a foregone conclusion, man. Could you imagine the level of outrage if this doesn't get approved for whatever reason, or if Bill de Blasio doesn't sign off on the transfer of Citi Field? Like, come on, man. This is going to happen. Steve Cohen is going to be the next owner of the Mets. It makes too much sense for all parties involved. Like, this is a positive step forward for Major League Baseball, for the Mets franchise, for the game itself. Like, to have a major market team being able to operate with the kind of capital, the resources that Steve Cohen can bring to the table, I mean, you're talking about another potential juggernaut in the landscape of Major League Baseball.
And what would be the rationale behind de Blasio not approving it? He's never been convicted of anything, and I know there are people that say he's a bad guy, and I don't know if that's true, but he's never been convicted of anything.
Well, he hasn't been convicted of anything, but he's had to pay a lot of fines to the SEC.
Okay.
So, I, listen, I, again, Dave, you know, New York City has something to say about the lease agreement with Citi Field. So, I mean, it seems like it's more of a procedural thing than anything else. It's something that has to happen, but it feels like the stars are aligning for all of these boxes to get checked and Steve Cohen to take over the team.
I can't
see how it could be a negative from any way you look at it.
No. Seems like Jerry Reinsdorf is going to do everything in his power to not allow Steve Cohen to get his hands on the Mets, though, huh?
He's going to relax. I mean, stop. I mean,
it doesn't matter, though. I mean, you got the necessary votes, right? He's going to get 22 out of the 29 other owners to vote for him, so it's going to happen.
Give Fred Wilpon a break, all right? I mean, come on.
Did you see that he sent a note around? The Wilpon sent a note around basically as a big goodbye?
Yeah, they had a Zoom meeting. Just say goodbye.
Yeah.
This is a fresh start, man. New lease on life. Just wait, Dave. We got all these. I mean, we got deep pockets all of a sudden now.
Come on, you gotta be excited.
I couldn't be more excited.
Right. Good.
I don't like to touch the money, though. See it approved first, and then all of a sudden we take over the town. Up there in Yankees territory, all they do is disappoint their fan base. All of a sudden Steve Cohen jumps in.
Please, yeah. All they do is go to the ALCS every year. How disappointing that must be. Please.
We got all this talent. Find a way to actually get the most out of it. This is a good time, too, if you think about it. I mean, if you want to pull a positive out of what's going on in the world right now, when you get new ownership like this, it's got this kind of money. I mean, you may have the opportunity now with some of these teams that don't want to pay star players to poach a few guys here.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, the star players you got to go after. Second of all, the star free agents you have to. Don't you have to make a splash in free agency?
I think he will. But like I'm more excited about the money he's going to spend in other places too. That the Wilpons didn't.
I'm excited about all of it. About the fact that he's going to spend money on scouting, back end of the organization, GM, the minor leagues, free agency, spend big money. I mean, really the Dodgers is what you should be.
Exactly.
We're going to try to put an elite farm system out there, and we're going to try to bring in the high-priced free agent. That's what you want.
Yeah, we're going to develop our own players, and then we can afford to keep our own players. And then we, if there's a free agent that we like, we can go out and spend the money to get that guy.
Very exciting.
To add on.
Very exciting. World Series on 98.7 ESPN presented by AutoZone. Catch all the action tonight after Carlin on 98.7 ESPN and the ESPN app. Now, I'm rooting for the Dodgers, but I will buy into your belief system tonight, Rick. And that is, I want to see more baseball. I'm rooting for the Rays to win Game 6.
I am too. I mean, that's exactly what you want to see. I want to see, give me Walker Buehler and Charlie Morton in a Game 7. I'll sign up for that right now. That's what you want.
Trevor Bauer send out that tweet over the weekend?
He just goes everywhere.
No, I'm just saying. He was just like, the baseball gods aren't going to deny us a Game 7 with Charlie Morton and Walker Buehler on the mound.
I would hope not.
That would be awesome.
Another chance to see Walker Buehler in those jeggings, I mean, would be tremendous.
He's terrific.
I don't know how he pitches in such tight pants. Like you could not get in tighter pants than Walker Buehler.
He's a skinny guy.
Yeah, but you could be skinny, but those are skin tight.
Yeah. Like he painted those things.
They're tighter than football pants?
You can see the pulse in his junk. These things are so tight.
Oh, dear. All right. Moving right along.
I don't know why I never noticed that or paid attention to it.
Please don't. continue to not notice and or pay attention.
The little things. Little things.
Yeah, why do you notice everything like this?
I don't know. I told you. I got problems. How many times do I need to tell you that? I got issues. I almost had an issue this morning. Look, I'm sitting here with a bag of ice. I had a real issue this morning that I was going to have to go to the hospital.
Do I want to ask what happened, or do I want to stay away
Probably
from it?
Probably not. I mean, it's junk. It's junkle related.
No. We'll move
on.
We made a bank full of
didn't
callers.
Listen to the wife.
Bankful. Let's go to the callers. I'm going to talk right over you. Go to the callers. Mike in Westbury. Mike, good morning. Lead us off. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I just wanted to touch on the Jets and Sam Darnold. Now, in regards to Sam, I know the Jets are, they're a disaster to say the least. But now, if you're the Jets, you have a solid quarterback. You have Sam Darnold. And like you guys said, you have a bunch of problems. If you do the right thing and you don't win a game and you get Trevor Lawrence with the number one pick, would you consider trading that and addressing other issues with the multiple draft picks you'd be getting for him?
Here's the problem with that, man. You don't answer the question of whether or not Sam Darnold is definitively your franchise quarterback. Like, if you're in position to draft Trevor Lawrence, you have the first overall pick. So I can't imagine that you would have seen something from Sam over these next nine games that would be able to answer the question in the affirmative. And if you can't do that, can you really pass on the upside that Trevor Lawrence brings to the table?
No. And financially, thanks for the call, Mike, right? You're at the point where you're going to have to start paying Sam Darnold. You refresh the whole thing if you bring in Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, but financially is secondary to whether or not you got the franchise quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, if Trevor Lawrence is that good, I don't care how many draft picks you get in what positions you choose to address. However many it ends up being, will that equate to what you expect to get from Trevor Lawrence at the most important position in sports?
If you think Trevor Lawrence is Andrew Luck or John Elway, I don't know how you pass on him.
You have to take him.
You have to. There's no question about it. And according according to Feinbaum, he feels like Justin Fields is on that same level. Not quite as good, but in terms of being a generational talent, he feels like he's right up there as well. So if you're the Giants and you find yourself with the second overall pick, yeah, I think that's a consideration as well. Now, we'll see if they're willing to pull the plug on Daniel Jones only after two seasons, but if Justin Fields is right there staring you in the face, it'd be hard to turn down.
I think you have to, actually. Because think about this, Chris. If you have an opportunity to take Justin Fields, it means that you've won, what, two games, maybe?
Yeah.
So I have to think of the Giants are a two-win football team, that Daniel Jones has had a horrendous second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I got to take the new quarterback. I have to.
Yeah, I don't even think it's a question, Dave. And everybody's asking whether or not Daniel Jones can get the turnovers fixed. The one thing that gives me pause in trying to answer that question is the kid turned the ball over an awful lot at Duke. They had 30 interceptions down at Duke in 3 years starting. It's a lot of turnovers, man.
And it's all he does in the NFL. And again, so, I mean, he shows you moments of, hey, you know what? He looks good. Even during that Eagles game, I thought he played well. But, you know, his fault, receiver's fault, is always turnovers from him. Every single game, multiple turnovers. That can't
But you know what, Dave? That can't always be everybody else's fault.
That's my point.
You can't always
point the finger.
Especially when you have 34 turnovers in 20 games. It can't always be on somebody else. At some point, you have to be accountable for all of the giveaways. And regardless of what kind of talent the kid brings to the table, if he's giving the ball away at that rate, then it's going to make it hard for you to win football games and consistently be competitive.
Could not agree with you more. Let's go to Dave in Cranford. Dave, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Guys, man, good morning. Hey, listen to you all the time, but I just got some issues with it. It just seems like you're telling a little bit of a story this morning, you know, about the decisions of the Giants. The one that really got to me was holding on to Eli Manning. And here's the point. You have to understand the history of why John Mara held on to Eli. And that
why?
Was because Wellington. Because
Stop
Wellington.
It. Stop. You know what? It's enough already, Dave. The guy won you multiple Super Bowls. So he wasn't good anymore.
Yeah, but you don't know that, Dave.
I know it. I saw it. He wasn't good anymore.
Come on, man. Is Drew Brees good enough to win the Super Bowl right now? You don't know.
Probably
Drew Brees' team is in the playoffs every single year, though, Dave.
Totally
that's the difference.
Agree.
So, I mean, here's the thing.
Chris.
I'm not going to blame Eli Manning for what happened the last four or five seasons he was the quarterback of the Giants. Yeah, I'm not going to say that he was the problem, but Eli Manning certainly wasn't the answer. And I think that Giants ownership was – hold on, let me finish, Dave. I think Giants ownership was slow to admit that this team was in need of a rebuild, in need of an overhaul. And when you start to change things around, when you start to try to rebuild this thing from the ground up, you got to look at the quarterback position because that is a foundational piece. And Eli Manning was not going to be the quarterback for the Giants. When we go back to the 2013-2014 season, I think ownership should have realized, okay, if we're moving on from Tom Coughlin, then we probably need to reset things, and that includes taking a look at the quarterback position. And they didn't want to do that. And they thought that they could try to retool this thing on the fly, and it blew up in their face to the point where you've got the worst record in football over the last 3.5 seasons.
I've lived it every day, Chris. I know that. What I'm saying to you is that it's easy to look back on those decisions now.
No, Dave, you're wrong.
We said it when it was happening.
Exactly.
We talked about it when it was happening, Dave. This is not revisionist history. This is something that we said. We said if you're going to continue to lose football games, you might as well lose with the purpose of getting a young quarterback experience, because eventually that's going to benefit everybody around him. What's the point in marching Eli Manning out there in year 16 and continuing to have double-digit loss seasons? That didn't make any sense.
It took us to Kerry Collins to finally get somebody. That's the point.
What are you talking about?
I don't understand. What's the point? I don't get
the
point.
They moved on from Phil Sims too early. He should have stayed on for another couple years. And
they messed up with Phil Sims because they gave the job to Jeff Hostetler, is what they did originally with Sims.
Yes, they moved on. They cut Phil Sims too early.
But then Sims wound up as the starter again. And remember, they in 93, they lost to San Francisco, and then they moved on from Phil Sims.
Yeah, of course they did, but they would say it was too early. And they look back on that as a mistake, and it was too early.
They may look back at that as a mistake, but Eli Manning, they kept for too long. And there's no one in the world that could convince me otherwise.
Well, I mean, Dave, the proof is the record. That's all you got to look at. I don't think there's any more to it than that. You can go back and forth trying to debate whether or not they should have held on to Eli, but, I mean, look at Eli's record the last five or six seasons he was with the Giants. It's abysmal.
Bad. I mean, since you guys won the Super Bowl, which is what, February of 2012, is that right?
Yeah. So 2012, they had a 9-7 season, and then it was downhill from there. 7-9, 6-10, 6-10. They had the 1-11-5 year where Jerry Reese went and spent $200 million on the defensive side of the ball in free agency.
Which equated to zero playoff wins.
Zero playoff wins. Yep. You know, that was the boat trip and the fiasco in Green Bay. Then they went 3-12, 5-11, and now 1-3.
Bad.
I mean, yeah, you can't afford to sprinkle in 3-13 seasons.
Sprinkle them in. This is the constant now.
No, I know. But, I mean, that's to his point about Drew Brees. I mean, is Drew Brees the same quarterback? No, he's not. But because of, you know, how this team was built around him, because of Sean Payton, I mean, they're a team that's won, you know, over the last couple of years, 11, 13, and 13.
Yes, that's the difference.
And have
that's
been a bad call away from moving on in the postseason in consecutive seasons.
And their offense
or Drew Brees' interception away from moving on in the postseason.
And even in seasons where they're like 7-9, when you look at their offense is still one of the best in football.
There's still the productivity there.
Yeah, the defense stinks. I mean, those seasons the defense stunk, but the offense was still great.
And they win games. I mean, you can't compare these two things. You got Eli winning 3, you got Drew Brees winning 13. You know what? If Eli's winning 13, you can roll the corpse out there.
It's been so bad, though, Dave, the last 3 years. 13 losses, 11 losses, 12 losses, already 6 losses through 7 weeks of the season. I mean, to say that the Giants, you know, to say that was a tough call to make, it really wasn't. It shouldn't have been.
Well, it was
if you're
them.
Making a decision on what's in the best interest of your football team moving forward.
It's just, that was just Hackfest. Hackfest 20.
I'll be back in a minute. I don't know what to say. Because if I blame Santiago, you're going to be like, how could you throw him under the bus?
I'm not going to be under the bus because it's not my fault.
Okay.
Let's give me some credit too for battling through that.
We're still in segment. If I need your mic to be down, I will bring it down and talk to you.
That's not in segment.
You couldn't.
That's not in segment. The segment was over. I threw it to Rick.
Rick was doing an in segment read, wasn't he?
It's an in segment read.
I'm done. He knows I'm done. Pots us down. You can pot the both of us down.
What if I want to incorporate you into the read?
Why would I have you? You've never once incorporated me
Who
into
knows?
The read.
Maybe I want to bring you into Fansville. Okay, have some Dr. Pepper.
That's a lie. You've been incorporated.
I don't know if his bladder can handle any Dr.
Pepper. Duty called. I had to go to the bathroom. I'm not apologizing to anybody.
That's a Nick Foles level lie.
Not apologizing to anybody. Had to go to the bathroom. You can laugh all you want. Thank God I didn't say something really bad. I mean, if you didn't pot him down, you could hear God knows what.
Who, me?
Yeah.
I don't say anything during the breaks.
I mean, God knows what you could
say. I go downstairs to take care of the baby.
You could be on air and you're going to say it. In the break, God knows where we could go.
I don't wait till the break.
That's true. There is no filter. Let's bring him in. You want to be put in a good mood?
Of course.
Listen to this. Andy and Merrick. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, DCR. Hey, Rick. Hey, Chris. Don't tell Dave. I snuck out of the basement. Road trip up to the beautiful 416, the city of Toronto with a four-pack of NBA Raptors questions for you guys.
So you, I mean, well introduced. We're going four Raptors questions today.
And I don't want to hear any whining. They've only been around 25 years. Your entire adult life knows the Raptors. Ready, David and boys?
I got to be honest, I'm already turned off by this topic.
This is random as hell, yeah. Andy.
I could not be more
plus,
turned
off. Plus, the border is closed. I don't know how you got into Toronto.
You can't get up to Toronto.
You can't even get into Toronto.
I hooked up with Michelle Scalise at Security Dodge. Took a Jeep Grand Cherokee all the way up right through the border. It was beautiful. All right, question number one. What Arizona point guard was the first ever draft pick for
Damon
the Raptors?
Damon Stoudemire.
See, Mighty Mouse. One. Boom. Done. DeMar DeRozan was the first-round pick, ninth overall in 2009 of these Raptors. What college did he go to?
USC.
Bang! Bang!
What's up, Trojan? Two for two. The Raptors have had only one number one overall pick. Who was it?
What are you laughing about?
What's up, Trojan?
you were too much. The top overall. That's got to be the great Andrea Bargnani. Bargnani,
number
whatever his name is.
77 himself.
Yeah, great.
And finally, only one time have the Raptors drafted a player from Dave's adopted school, Georgetown. Name this Hoya who never played for the Raptors.
Oof, I don't think I know.
Come on, this is Georgetown. How would you
I don't
know?
Well, he never even played for them.
Yeah, but he played for Georgetown.
Yeah, well, I'm sure I know who he is.
He was traded for Jermaine O'Neal.
I mean, I have
2008.
2008. I mean, the only one I can think of is Sweetney, but it's not going to be Sweetney.
Oh, I know it
is. Is it Patrick's son?
No.
Is it Roy Hibbert?
Roy Hibbert's right. Hey. There you go.
Yeah, baby.
Fellas, let's be careful out there, especially north of the border, and always stay healthy, boys.
All right. That's
stay out of the brass rail, Andy.
Terrific. Andy from Merritt.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.